Chapter 30. Ever the Leader. In place of darkness, light hath sprung up. May God say this of the church in Philadelphia, quote, I have naught against thee, end quote. Mary Baker Eddy, 1898. The demands on Mrs. Eddy gave her no time to dwell upon the loss of her dear student, Mrs. Knapp. But when the directors sent $1,000 for the Concord Church, she responded on May 31st, Your generous check for $1,000 is received. I thank you, but most of all do I give thanks that you still go on in this office and our old tender church relations are not severed. God grant that they may remain worthy to be perpetuated. Oh, what a shock was my information relative to my beloved student, Mrs. Knapp. When others could not help her, why did you not try Mr. Neal and Mrs. Laura Sargent? I ought not to murmur, and especially to the one most bereaved. Mary Baker Eddy. Mr. E. A. Kimball of Chicago, I name to supply the vacancy on the Board of Education. Edward Kimball had made an outstanding success of everything he had undertaken for Christian Science, from his management at the World's Fair in Chicago 5 years earlier, to an exceptionally fine address at the Chicago Church Dedication in November, and more recently as chairman of the newly formed Board of Lectureship. Quite soon, his very success as a lecturer would pose another problem, but before that time, many other things required the leader's attention. On the 11th of May, she had written a notice changing the Friday evening testimonial meetings to Wednesdays in all the churches to begin on the second Wednesday in June. On Sunday, May 15th, she had sent an additional lesson topic to Mr. McKenzie, Sacrament, to be used on Communion Sundays in the future. But in June of 1898, the communion service in the Mother Church was unique. At the point where the usual service would have ended, Septimus Hanna, the first reader, stepped forward and read a message from the leader entitled, quote, Not Pantheism, but Christian Science, end quote. Prior to this message, three others from the mother had been published in the June journal. The first was, quote, To the Children, Contributors to the Mother's Room and Flower Fund, end quote. Miscellany, page 216. Requesting that they disband the Busy Bee Society. The second message was a recognition of Colonel Sabin's conversion to and open praise of Christian Science. The Washington Newsletter, edited by Colonel Oliver C. Sabin, 512 10th Street, Washington, D.C., has the sharp, righteous ring of both law and gospel. I recommend that every Christian Scientist on terra firma subscribe for this scintillating newspaper for 1 year, commencing in 1898, to read what comes from Colonel Sabin's able pen on the general or universal good in its relation and application to current topics is to draw a moral in favor of Christian Science, as by equitable decree. The leader's third message, titled, quote, Take Notice, end quote, which has been republished as the first paragraph of, quote, Rules of Conduct, end quote, Miscellany, page 223, notified the public that she would not receive complaints, callers, etc. Communion Sunday was June 5th. On Wednesday, June 8th, an editorial in the Boston Herald contained this paragraph, quote, Mrs. Eddy, Christian Scientist, says that pantheism is derived from Pan, a mythological god. Apparently, her celestial intimacies have not improved her etymology. It doesn't pan out well. End quote. To which Mrs. Eddy responded, To the editor of the Herald, the allusion to your issue of the 8th, to the word pantheism in my message to the Mother Church, has arrived late for me to correct it. I am glad, however, to say it was incorrect. I did not write, quote, pantheism is derived from Pan, a mythological god, end quote. These were my words, quote, pantheism is composed of two words, pan and theism, end quote. I happen to know the derivation of this word before my etymology was challenged, and also the self-evident fact that the word pantheism is composed as aforesaid. Pantheism is derived from two Greek words, meaning all and God. Christian Science teaches that God is all in all. This would place pantheism within the borderline of Christian Science, were it not for the equally emphatic declaration in Christian Science that spirit is infinite all. Therefore, there is no matter. Mary Baker Eddy. Pleasant View, Concord, New Hampshire, June 17, 1898. The leader's message, quote, not pantheism but Christian Science, end quote, was not published in the columns of the journal, but instead was issued in pamphlet form in September under the title Christian Science versus Pantheism. The latter title was one of the original weekly lesson topics sent to the Bible Lesson Committee in April, but was deleted and replaced with God the Preserver of Man. About the time that the field received the new lesson topics, Mr. Buswell was teaching his outstanding class in Concord, New Hampshire. It convened in Christian Science Hall under the direct supervision of Mrs. Eddy, and to the joy of all present, the leader addressed that class. She sensed the needs of the members, and among many other things she said to them, quote, make drunkenness appear hateful to a man. Show him the loathsomeness of it, and he is cured. Destroy the fear of sickness, and your patient is cured. End quote. Mrs. Eddy's disciples in the 1890s performed the marvelous healings that Jesus' disciples had wrought more than 1900 years earlier. In both cases, the understanding and spirituality of the leader were manifested through their students, but perhaps the 19th century disciples were more aware of this fact. Members of Mr. Buswell's class were aware of it, and it is altogether possible that many of them had experiences similar to that of two Canadian students, Mr. and Mrs. Higman, as described in Mrs. Higman's letter to her teacher. Ottawa, July 16th, 1898. Dear Mr. Buswell, your kind letter received. Every word you say to us we value and heed. About 6 weeks ago on Monday next, a girl was brought to me far gone in consumption. It was a most discouraging case, if one allowed the senses to judge. I had to say to myself, surely you would not let her die, because it looks like a failure before you start. I said, no, whatever the result, my duty is clear. After 1 week, there was a slight improvement. In 2 weeks, I said to her mother, a poor woman and a widow, the money you used to spend on cod liver oil will buy science and health in a few weeks. She consented and paid me for it. I wrote to her while in Concord, and today she is well, not half well, but perfectly recovered. No cough, happy and well. This girl and a man I have tried for a long time to cure of drunkenness both appeared to my consciousness very clearly while the mother in class that day said, make drunkenness appear hateful to a man. Show him the loathsomeness of it, and he is cured. Destroy the fear of sickness, and your patient is cured. Both of these cases are well today, and they were the only ones I had in mind while she spoke. When I tell you I had tried my best for 4 months to sober this man for his wife and children's sake, you will believe as I do that the illumination of Mrs. Eddy's thought shone through mine and did the work. My husband told me at the time he had the same man in mind when she spoke. If I continue as I have begun, I shall be a credit to you. Many people are coming to us, but these two cases keep urging me to write you. With love and best wishes to Mrs. Buswell, believe me, Elizabeth Higman. The field received the new lesson topics in the July 1898 quarterly, and as with every new step, the leader had to proceed slowly and gently. Therefore, in this quarterly, each week had two lesson sermons, the morning lesson with the new subject and the afternoon lesson with the subject from the international series, as had been done previously. The new subjects are the same today, except for the addition of sacrament, which placed unreality in the next quarter. Some of the international series subjects in that 1898 quarterly were Elijah converting the people from Baal to God, Ahab gains a vineyard through treachery, Elisha's prophecy concerning Joash, the children of Israel depart from the true God to serve idols. The field received something else of interest in July. The second page of the July journal was entitled, quote, An Interesting Prophecy, end quote, which presented on the next 18 pages Reverend Spring's vision, quote, The Church in the Wilderness, end quote. Hannah had sent this vision together with his accompanying editorial to Mrs. Eddy for her approval. Her response on June 10th said, I have not the time to read your article before Laura returns, but have seen it enough to say You may have the vision and the accompanying circumstances at your control. I would make it a leader, not editorial. I have read your article. 'Tis wonderful, sound, lawyer-like in argument. Please, if you cast this bread on the water, add the bit enclosed after fixing it to your liking. God be with us both, and He will. Is. When she received the proofs, the leader had second thoughts about Hannah's article and wrote him on June 18th. The time has not yet come in which to say the wonderful things you have written in proof, read by me today, unless you qualify it. Now you may hold your ground as therein, but do not say blandly that I represent the second appearing of Christ. That assertion will array mortal mind against us, and malicious animal magnetism has been putting it into your mind to say it, and the infinite love has inspired you to say it. Now be wiser than a serpent. Throw out your truths not as affirmations or protestations, but as suggestions. Then you catch your fish and make the wrath of man praise him. Many students had made statements about Mrs. Eddy's identity and mission, but their actions at times belied their words. When mind revealed this, gave it birth in consciousness, as had occurred with Ira Knapp, it became an unshakable premise. And now mind had made this revelation to Septimus Hanna. The leader decided to leave Mr. Hanna and his revelation alone with mind, so she wrote him again on June 22nd. Your vision article is too grand, true, to be tampered with. I ventured to send for it to see if it cannot be held together and be the leader. I want it where all will catch sight of it. I write this before Laura will get here. I am so bothered then to get time. Will add all else I wish to tell you after she brings proofs. Years later in his reminiscences, Mr. Hanna wrote, although the last letter indicated permission to proceed with the publication of the entire article, I concluded it best to publish only that of Mr. Spring and the more general part of what I said of the prophecy of Isaiah, deferring the other until a future time and make it a separate article. After this, events in connection with the work and the Woodbury suit came so thick and fast that there seemed no opportune time to again bring the matter to Mrs. Eddy's attention, which I felt I must do before publishing it. And there it rested. My own conception of the whole matter, however, has not changed. And I see it today just as I saw it then. Laura Sargent was courier for Mrs. Eddy, and many another student carried messages regularly between Pleasant View and Boston. The leader's directives to her lieutenants were always handled with dispatch, but messages to the field did not fare so well. Every day, items of interest crossed Mrs. Eddy's desk, which she would like to pass on to the field. In addition, new steps and numerous decisions affecting the field were increasing as the movement burgeoned forth in branches and to wait sometimes a month for the next issue of the journal seemed unduly long. The July journal had notified the field of the appointment of Annie Knott and Sue Harper Mims to the Board of Lectureship. It had also included Mrs. Eddy's card, answering numerous letters, asking what should be done with the balance of the flower fund for the mother's room. But it did not tell of Mr. Kimball's lecture in Kansas City on June 10th, which was a great success, nor his lecture the next day in Chicago, nor of the dedication of the first Christian Science Church in Canada in Toronto on June 19th. By the time these items could be included in later issues, many others would be wanting space, such as this letter on June 19th to Mrs. Eddy, which appeared in the September journal, together with her note. Will the author of the following please mail to me his or her name? Mother. My mother, to be blessed as you are blessed, to follow your footsteps, to be worthy to be called thy child, to be guided in divine love, to know the love, the truth, as you have taught us, is my constant prayer. Although I am a student of your student, my thoughts of you are one with God. The light seems to shine brighter, the love nearer, when I think of the dear, noble soul who has only the welfare of others at heart, whose heart beats with response and with love for us who are traveling onward. Sometimes I know you are near me, and again you are floating far, far beyond. I can just see your white robe in the shadow. I stretch forth my arms, and lo, you are with love. Your arms are stretched forth, and you say, "Come, come, be not weary." And I wipe away the tears, and a smile of welcome greets my mother. Yours in love, your grandchild. Whether to help her weary, weeping children to answer other inquiries, or to dissolve the errors in her immediate experience, the leader dictated the following in 1/2 hour on the 8th of July. Origin of Evil. St. Paul writes, quote, "There is one God and Father of all, who is above all and through all and in you all," end quote. Ephesians 4, verse 6. Spiritually and literally, that all is spirit and all is good. For God is spirit, and God is good, and God is all. Here is the closing argument as to the actuality of either matter or evil. Whence then the inquiry contrary to this fact? Who is it that says that matter exists? Who is it that is evil, sinful, wicked? We answer in the words of Jesus when he replied to the hoary question as to the origin of man, and coincide with St. Paul's declaration in asserting that God is the Father of all, and there is but one God, one mind. Hence, all is mind, and there is no matter. But what of a sinner and whence are sinners? We answer in the words of our Master, quote, "Ye are of your father the devil, and the lusts of your father ye will do. He was a murderer from the beginning, and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own, for he is a liar, and the father of it." End quote. Now here is the origin of evil. A lie. And a lie has no origin in truth. It was always a lie. Then the origin of a lie is a lie. What can be said further than this in corroboration of the nothingness of evil, its non-existence? But say you, I see the working of evil. I feel evil. I hear evil. And whence are these evidences? And am I not I? Yes, you are I. But this I or ego is neither matter nor evil. What then is it? We repeat the answer, a lie and a liar, and the liar is not more real than the lie. Among the thinkables which explain a falsity is this. Here is a man possessing a large real estate. He owns it. His father owned it before him. And still more remotely, his grandfather owned it. And so far as the history of the property can be traced, it descended legally to this one heir. But a deed is presented by another claimant to this real estate. The deed is written in due form. The names of the grantor and the grantee are given, and the names of the witnesses in their different handwritings, and the seal is attached to the name of the owner. But the owner of the property disputes all this fair seeming and declares that the claim is false and defies the man to sustain it. And he cannot, even though the deed is recorded. Thus it is with God, good and evil, the opposite claim to good. With God, spirit and matter, the opposite claim to spirit, the false claim is written out, and it is recorded. But the true claim is not less valid because of this. And the false is not more true because of its remote date or millions of years. And God will not admit its truth any more today or tomorrow than yesterday, for it never was true. And he declared it from the great forever, for God is without beginning or end of days. He is from everlasting unto everlasting. And God is good, and God is infinite. Therefore, good is all, and there is none beside him, as the scriptures plainly declare. And which declaration was not only in the Hebrew Decalogue, but exists undisputably and eternally in the nature of God and in the definition of infinity. This article was not published, but Mrs. Eddy was considering a speedier means of communication with the field in the summer of 98, while she was also involved with the selling of her Roslindale house and the search for a cook and housekeeper. Mrs. Armstrong helped out for a few weeks at Pleasant View about the same time that Mr. Bates resigned as trustee of the Publishing Society. And it was about this same time that the leader decided to have the Publishing Society issue a weekly newspaper in addition to the monthly journal, while leaving the decision of Mr. Bates's successor to the discretion of the trustees. Mrs. Eddy was besieged with questions about the movement, and Mr. Fry did his best to shield her from as many as possible. On August 18th, in response to a letter from Mr. McKenzie, he wired, quote, "I wrote you August 12th that Mother declined to nominate a trustee," end quote. As so often happened, when she let the students make decisions, their actions hindered rather than helped her work for the world. Her letter to McKenzie on August 20th stated, quote, "The dignity of our cause and the good of the students demand of us to publish a weekly newspaper," end quote. The first issue was scheduled to appear in less than 2 weeks, but another letter to McKenzie was necessary on August 23rd, when she learned that they had elected her editor as trustee. "You failed to see that nobody is yet as ready to be editor of the weekly newspaper as those with whom I have cooperated for years. Now, dear one, nothing but the evil one could have hindered you from seeing this, and so as there is no Satan, you are not prevented recognizing this important fact. When Judge Hanna resigns, I hereby say that I will appoint the trustee. Please hurry this matter up. Call your meeting at once and find enclosed my appointments." The mother knew how burdened Judge Hanna had been with all his responsibilities. The editorship of the weekly was important, and all the additional work he could take on at the present time, however, he had the best help obtainable, his wife Camilla as assistant editor. The appointment enclosed with the mother's letter named Irving C. Tomlinson for trustee, but she withdrew his name the next day. On August 30th, she wrote to McKenzie, quote, "Beloved, I will give you one of my most faithful ones to give him a rest till I may recall him," end quote. This was followed by a letter to McKenzie and Neil on September 8th stating, quote, "I hereby appoint Thomas W. Hatton to fill the vacancy on your board," end quote. Mr. Hatton was definitely the right one for the position, although he was not sure of it at first, as is evident in a letter from Fry to Hatton on September 15th. Mother says she had much rather have you go back and take the place you had before on her books than to leave the publishing office. She calls your attention to the cause of Mrs. Knapp and asks, quote, "Did she do better because she devoted all her time to Christian Science practice?" end quote. This faithful student applied himself where he was and successfully filled the position of trustee for more than 18 years, longer than any other person, except the dedicated William P. McKenzie. The Weekly. "The dignity of our cause and the good of the students demand of us to publish a weekly newspaper," Mary Baker Eddy. On Thursday, the 1st of September, the new weekly made its first appearance. For this new venture, the leader revised her, quote, Invocation for 1868, end quote, Poems, page 28, which appeared on page 4. A Dedicatory Poem by Mary Baker G. Eddy. And the eyes of them that see shall not be dim, and the ears of them that hear shall hearken. Isaiah. Thou all in all of every age, and rising radiant sphere, help us to write a deathless page of truth this waning year. Help us to humbly seek and sow, and reap thy wise behest, whate'er the boon, a joy or woe, knowing thou knowest best. Aid the soul sense to soar and sing above the tempest's glee. Give us the eagle's fearless wing, the dove's to mount to thee. All merciful, how faint, unfed, is every hungry heart. Give us each day our daily bread in knowing what thou art. This prayer for God's aid in her own writing 30 years earlier was now an inspiration for the Hannahs in this new undertaking. The first two pages of the weekly were devoted to world news, which brought forth many expressions of gratitude from busy scientists. Hostilities had ceased between the United States and Spain by September, and it is a point of interest that the four-month Spanish-American War was the only war in which the United States was involved from the time of Mrs. Eddy's discovery of Christian Science in 1866 throughout the rest of her sojourn among mortals. A news capsule in the September 15th weekly stated, according to the War Department, the total number of officers and enlisted men killed in the war with Spain was 264. While this loss is to be deeply regretted, yet the percentage is so small as compared with other wars, ancient or modern, and considering the magnitude of this war, that it is without a parallel in history. The following letter to Mrs. Eddy was read at the Wednesday evening meeting at Christian Science Hall on the 14th of September. Beloved Mother and Teacher, I want to thank you, dear Mother, for what to me has been a very great demonstration of truth during the time of the recent war, and finally over the war. While I know that loyal scientists have been at work upon the thought, to me it was your demonstration. It has given me a greater sense of the power of truth and love than I could before comprehend, and I feel I can catch a glimpse of what the disciples saw after some of Jesus's great demonstrations. According to report, out of 400 yellow fever cases, everyone recovered and were afterward placed at the front because they were better than before the illness. All cases which the physicians thought could not recover gained their normal condition right before them, much to the surprise of the physicians. The number of cases of so-called loss of life has been so small as to call forth wonderment from all. The kindness extended to prisoners, the many instances of brotherly love, the tact, discretion, and wisdom displayed by President McKinley, and finally, the declaration of peace. All this, compared with the former war, shows a much greater manifestation of love and its power, a higher understanding of it. In Science and Health, page 235, in your interpretation of the commandment, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me," it reads, "It ends wars." And the recent demonstration proves the truth of that statement. Again, allow me to thank you for the uplifting I have experienced, and also the great good the world has received through the great demonstration. With much love, your sincere student, Lydda W. Fitzpatrick. Fever was a greater enemy to the American soldier in Cuba than was battle, and the Weekly had more than one testimony of healing in this regard. The following was copied from the Washington newsletter. W. L. Lowe, son of Colonel Lowe of Galveston, Texas, at the Wednesday evening Christian Science meeting last week, gave an account of his being healed of a complication of fevers, which the doctor pronounced typhoid, yellow, and malarial, contracted in Cuba. He was landed at the Washington Hospital in such a condition that it was thought he could live but a short time. And through the intercessions of some kind friends, he was taken to the house of a lady in this city who chanced to be a scientist. This lady prevailed upon the young man to try Christian Science for the healing of his complaint. The father, Colonel R. G. Lowe, general manager of the Galveston Dallas News, who had been telegraphed the condition of his son, hastened on to Washington to see him, if possible, before he died, and to convey the remains back to Texas for burial. One can imagine the father's surprise upon his arrival in this city, to find that this, as he thought dying, son had been completely healed by Christian Science treatment. Colonel Lowe visited President McKinley and told him of the wonderful cure which had been wrought upon his son. The president took a red carnation from his coat and gave it to the colonel for his son, with his kind respects and congratulations that he had been so marvelously and wonderfully cured. Young Lowe's account of his healing and of the gratitude he feels towards God for this manifest blessing given to him was very beautiful to hear. And the gratitude of his father and family, he informs us, is equal to his, they all realizing the bountiful and beautiful love which God is showing to his children in everyday life. In addition to the foregoing, early issues of the Weekly included a letter from Mrs. Eddy to the editor of the Washington newsletter to the effect that the new publication would not interfere with his circulation, listed two new lecturers, Edward H. Hammond and Alfred Farlow, announced Mrs. Eddy's new pamphlet on pantheism, included notices regarding Wednesday evening meetings, church rules, and that there would be no October annual meeting in 1898. A Concord item told of the Earl and Countess of Dunmore and their daughters visiting Pleasant View, and a news item from the Boston Transcript noted that Albert Metcalf had been elected president of the Mother Church. Another item involving Albert Metcalfe was not noted in the newspapers, but is clearly delineated in Mrs. Eddy's letter of September 30th to her directors. My beloved students, I call your attention to an important point. Mr. Metcalfe gave us the church organ. He is dissatisfied with the organist's playing. Now it is but just and right that we satisfy him if we can. To this end, and to show him our appreciation of what he has done for us, I direct you to call a meeting of your board and appoint a committee of one, and that one, Albert Metcalfe, to engage for our church the organist. Then, at the expiration of this present one's term of service, he can suit himself to the man that shall play our church organ. After your appointment of him on committee, write a kind, respectful letter to him, informing him of your appointment and that it was my request. As a consequence, Albert F. Conant became the organist for the Mother Church a few months later, which position he filled for the next 13 years. However, Mr. Conant's 13 years playing for the Mother Church is secondary in his contribution to the cause of Christian Science. About the time he began as organist, he also began working on a plan which has become of inestimable aid to every student and which resulted in a comprehensive concordance to science and health. The weekly also included several reports of lectures, the first in the Mother Church by Irving C. Tomlinson, one in Saratoga Springs by Carol Norton, one in Denver by Edward A. Kimball, quote, to an audience that completely filled the Broadway Theater, including all available space on the stage and standing room in the foyer, end quote. And another by Kimball in Detroit, where, quote, the theater, which had been secured for the occasion, was not only crowded, but hundreds went away who were unable to find standing room, end quote. An extract from the San Diegan Sun told of Mr. Kimball's lecture in San Diego, California. Edward A. Kimball, lecturer for the Christian Scientists of America, talked for nearly 2 hours last night to an audience of 1,200 people at the Fisher Opera House. And although this subject is to a certain extent theoretical and might, in consequence, suffer from dryness at times, it is certainly to the credit of the lecturer and his treatment of the subject that the individual attention of every person in the house was held during the entire evening. Mr. Kimball's subject was, quote, Christian Science, what it is and what it is not, end quote. And as a lecturer and proselyter, he is certainly refreshingly unique, for he indulged in no forensic flights of eloquence, made no attempt at word painting, used no imagery, good, bad, or indifferent, quoted from no authority, ancient or modern, save the Bible, abused no one, ridiculed no one, made no charges against the alleged enemies of Christian Science, and never once attempted to appeal to the passions or emotions of his hearers, but on the contrary, talked calmly and steadily, nailing each proposition home before he went on to the next. in a way that carried conviction almost against one's will. Kimball's lectures were a tremendous boon to the cause of Christian Science, but his very ability, popularity, and success posed a problem within the movement. All the churches wanted Mr. Kimball to lecture for them, nor was it easy for the other lecturers to compete with Mr. Kimball's genius. The notice in the journal, which originally read, quote, "Any church which desires a lecture may apply directly to any one of the lecturers," end quote, was amended to read, "The members of this board shall lecture in the several sections of our country as follows. Those who reside in the New England states shall lecture only in these states. Residents in the middle, southern, and western states shall lecture only within the boundaries of the group of states wherein they are located." Mrs. Eddy was delighted with Mr. Kimball's work, but she also did much to encourage the others, as this September 21st letter to the directors indicates. "Please give Reverend Mr. Tomlinson a call to lecture before the Boston audience at the Wednesday evening meeting next week, and notify all you can to be present. Also, call Mr. Carol Norton to lecture at the Wednesday evening meeting at Mrs. Frame's church the first Sabbath in October." Her unstinted praise and encouragement were constant and can be glimpsed in this letter to William P. McKenzie on October 1st. "My beloved son, and I have more than one, besides many beloved daughters. I am delighted with the reports of Reverend Tomlinson's success and only regret that newspapers stinted the lecture. What I have read of it in the Herald and Globe is just what meets the public need and demand, save in one point, which I will name to him. He, the Reverend Speaker, was saved from being trustee for mischief end. I have a big field for him to sow and reap." Many newspapers were beginning to print the Christian Science lectures in full. As the lectures and lecture attendance improved in the East, the response in the West was overwhelming. Before fall turned to winter, the leader appointed two new lecturers for the Pacific Coast, both MDs from California, Dr. Abraham Sulcher from Riverside and Dr. Francis J. Fluno from Oakland. The November Journal told of the opening services of the church in Philadelphia. The students there seem to have encountered many trials. It is not unlikely that Mrs. Eddy felt a special bond with them, for she knew, as they did not, that the sixth church age in the Book of Revelation, the church in Philadelphia, was truly her church, the church age of Christian Science. Her message to Henrietta Chanfrau was almost a message to her own efforts. It surely held a dual meaning, most particularly the last sentence. "My beloved student and brethren, I rejoice with thee. Blessed art thou. In place of darkness, light hath sprung up. The reward of thy hands is given thee today." May God say this of the church in Philadelphia: "I have naught against thee." Thomas Hatton was in his right place as a trustee of the Publishing Society, but not so with James Neal. What applied to one did not apply to the other. Hence, Mrs. Eddy's letter of October 13th to the trustees. In accordance with Mr. James Neal's willingness and my own desire that he devote his entire time to the great work of Christian Science Healing, in which he has been very successful, and which is one of the great needs of the period, I hereby request that this board give him an honorable discharge of his obligations as a member of this board, and that you elect Mr. Joseph Clark to fill the vacancy. Fall saw still more changes. A manual amendment had first readers read from Science and Health instead of the Bible. And another manual change pertained to missionaries. Though the leader reiterated that missionaries were needed in the field, her words regarding the Board of Missionaries were most emphatic. She wrote the directors on the 30th of October, quote, "The missionary board is to be dissolved and the bylaw annulled at your next meeting and left out of your manual," end quote. Changing currents and items nameless had kept Mrs. Eddy busy week after week. But perhaps the climaxing event of 1898 was in the leader's thought when she wrote this notice, which appeared in the November journal. To whom it may concern. Weeks have passed since I forwarded to the clerk of the Mother Church integrals of this article. Changing currents, moving the weather vane, church meetings, amendment of rules, items nameless, have delayed the publication of the following notice written last August. All true Christian Scientists, loyal in spirit and in truth, whether they have become thus by studying my works on Christian Science or by class instruction, who bring with them the credentials required of a candidate for membership with the Mother Church, are eligible to apply to the Christian Science Board of Education for examination. After passing the process of examination specified in the church manual, and the board has adjudged these candidates as qualified for the high responsibilities of teaching Christian Science, they shall receive a certificate thereof from the Board of Education. Students of the Massachusetts Metaphysical College with certificates of the degree of CSB and CSD are not required to be examined and do not apply to this board. Students of Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures and all of its authors' writings, having good morals and having demonstrated healing the sick according to the divine principle and rules therein, can apply to the Board of Education for examination, and if found qualified to teach Christian Science, they shall receive a certificate accordingly from the board.